We complement each other. He's very much the visionary in the clouds person, and I'm the one reining him in and getting down to the details. So aside from the virtual school stuff in the spring, it's been really fun.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers gang. Good to see everyone. Great to be back. We're here with Candid Conversations with me and Jamie, of course, and our good friends, Derek and Melanie Coburn. We've known them for about a decade. They're co-founders of the Cadre Group, which is an entrepreneur organization we've been involved with, and we'll talk about that. And we're bringing them on today, not only because we're involved in a lot of different business and family things together, but they had a really interesting story going through the pandemic of pivoting. That's kind of the subject today of pivoting business opportunities and family life through the pandemic. So Derek, Melanie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
See ya. Thanks for having us.
Hey guys.
Happy to be here.
Good. Good to see you guys too. So why don't you start? Because I know that we were having a pretty deep conversation about balance and pivoting to keep balance. And
absolutely. So you guys, you know, during the pandemic, so many people were presented with problems. I think we're all presented with problems. You know, your children are being brought home, your spouse is being brought home, everybody's home. And there's just so many challenges. And I saw you guys from afar pivot your personal life and your professional life, you know, which Jim and I admire so much that you guys took the opportunity and this challenge to create really an opportunity and an answer. And so, you know, can you tell us a little bit about what happened in your family first? And then we can talk about business later, but what kind of things were presented to you that you took the challenge and made it into an opportunity? What are some things that come to mind?
Sure. Obviously, living in a 1400 square foot condo was a big challenge in the beginning of the pandemic, especially before we knew how bad or how dangerous it was, because that was the time when we were like still washing all the groceries as they came through the door. And we were, you know, holding our breath in the elevator to go outside for a walk with the dog. You know, we were doing things that were, we just didn't know at the time. So we were doing the best that we could with the information that we had. But I think living in that small space really was tough. And one of the first things we started doing as a family was outdoor hikes. So that was like the one thing that was safe and keeping the boys active, getting us outside and really keeping us sane. Basically, the first couple months of COVID, we did more hiking, I think, in the first 2 months of COVID than we've ever done in our lives. And it was just, it was amazing. And
that's,
I think,
so
it was definitely a pivot that has sort of stuck. And now that we're in the house and they've got more space here in the suburbs, we aren't doing it as much, but it really, really got us through the beginning of the pandemic.
And how old are the boys again? How old are the boys now?
Dexter is 11 and Caleb is 8.
Yeah. So very, very active. I mean, sitting is not their style. I don't think anyone's style at that. So you guys had the extra challenge of being in the city life, because, and tell everyone, you guys lived in the DC area, right? A beautiful area, the DC area, that up until the pandemic, it suited, but then that changed quick, huh?
Yeah, we loved it. And, you know, Melanie mentioned the square footage, but it was never really an issue because we were always on the move. Both of our boys play sports, they're in other activities. I think the walkability score of our condo was a 99 out of 100. And we took full advantage of that. So we weren't there much. And then all of a sudden, the table that we eat our meals at is also the desk that Melanie works from, which was also right behind the door that I attached my bands to do my workouts.
The schoolhouse was right there at the kitchen table now, right? Everything.
Yeah, it was really hard. I mean, you know, the combination of being home more, the kids not having an outlet to burn energy, especially our youngest who has ADD, him not being able to run around and burn all those calories and burn off all that energy, sort of manifested in a lot of pent up tension and energy that was used in less than ideal ways, right? And so I realized, you know, it was a problem that wasn't going to go away and that space was probably going to solve it. And so even though we are city people and our plan all along was to buy another place in the city, you know, primarily because we wanted our kids to continue to enjoy the diversity that they were accustomed to. There just wasn't a lot of inventory. And then, of course, you start looking outside the city and you always know in the back of your mind that you're going to get more bang for your buck if you do that. But you just don't realize how much until it happens. And so now we have almost 5x the square footage and just a much better rhythm to what we're doing. So it took a pandemic to get us out of the city, but I think we're pretty happy with where we are right now.
So you took that such a big risk at a pivotal time. And it sounds like you guys are really pleased that you did it. Is everyone in the house pretty content with the situation?
Oh, yeah. They're loving it.
But how about you guys?
I love it. We're cooking more. We're decorating the house. It's just been super fun. A fun project to keep us distracted. And
I feel bad. I just feel bad that we didn't do this sooner based on how Melanie is leaning into the suburban mom thing. I mean, like we have, you know, one of those floating hot air Santas in our front yard right now.
Oh, you are fully immersed.
You're ready.
Fully immersed.
Yeah. It's been fun.
But you got so many people. I mean, there's dozens, literally dozens of people that we either know personally or that have reached out in our community. Like, I'm in New York and I don't think it's going to work anymore. I'm in, you know, just different areas. Chicago, we knew a number of people. They love the walkability. They love the city life. They love the diversity. But if they had kids from 1 to 14, it just was a lot. So what you guys faced was a lot of people. What was the hardest part about the move? So everyone's trying to say, what was the hardest part for you guys moving though?
I think some people don't have the courage to do what you did. Yeah, that's a great question. Where did you find those strength and what was the most?
I would say, first of all, I would say it was less courage and more of like a necessity. I mean, my wife was crying herself to sleep some nights and we didn't really have a choice from my perspective. You know, I think that the hardest part was just coming to the realization that we weren't going to stay in the city and we were sort of committed to staying in the city. I don't know. What would you say?
Yeah. I mean, I think the necessity 100% is what drove our decision to open the search, right? We never took DC out of the equation. There was no inventory at the time. We lost two houses in a bidding wars. We had been looking since September of 2019 for a house. So It wasn't like we weren't already looking. We were. We just couldn't find anything in the city that was going to work for our family. But when we opened the search, I will also say we realized, we have so many friends in this area. And within our neighborhood, within a mile, we have at least five members in Cadre that live near us. Two of my really good girlfriends.
No way.
Walking distance from here. So, you know, it's really just sort of shifting, right? Like opening up your eyes just to sort of see our kids are still, they've had such a diverse, they've grown up in DC. Our field trips were to all the museums. They've played on inner city basketball teams. Mm-hmm. You know, they know diversity. I mean, we were watching Frosty the Snowman the other night and my oldest was like, "Mommy, there's no brown skin people in this show." You know, he notices those things. And I feel like we've set them up to have those eyes to look for that. But we, you know, we'll still be back. And I joke with Derek all the time. We're going to be the empty nesters and be back into the chic condo in DC within a few years after our boys graduating college. So I'm not like worried about it. We're also only 18 minutes away. So it's not that far.
And I always tell people who contact us, say, look, if you don't like, because, you know, we live in what's considered a suburb. You know, we are beach suburb. And I always told people, if you don't like it, you can go back.
Yeah.
People think it's not like you've gone into the mob and you're in and you can never go back, you know, but you can go back. It's great to hear you guys really at this point don't want to go back. So you made the right decision.
At this point.
For now, for sure.
Yeah.
Have there been any other amazing surprises? Like, are there things that you didn't realize your boys could do or were so great at previously? Like, I've heard some families say, "Oh, my kids were failing in school, but when they came home, man, they love this online schooling." Have you had any other surprises besides you guys, the big surprise of suddenly moving out of the city and loving it? Do you have any other family surprises that have really come up that you're embracing?
100% not that.
Yeah.
They are not into the virtual school hat.
Okay.
But they do love the neighborhood. It was funny. We got them bikes. And on Halloween, one of Dexter's classmates came to trick or treat at our house. We did a whole socially distanced table in the front yard. And it was like, pick one candy. And his friend came by and realized where we lived. And he's like, oh, this is great. And he came the next day and knocked on the door and was like, can Dexter go for a bike ride? Or can we play? And we're like, we were so excited. We're like, yes, absolutely. But we forgot where they were going or what they were doing. And our children just like left on their bikes. And we were like, is this safe? Like, do we have any idea where they're going right now? I literally got in my car and I drove around the neighborhood to make sure. So,
and the entire time we weren't really that worried, right? Like we knew.
Well, but it's new.
Yes.
You know, it's still new. So you're going, wait a minute. Okay. This makes sense.
Our oldest is like walking our dog now at, 8 o'clock at night in the dark.
Yeah.
And we're not thinking anything of it. That would have never happened. Even though we lived in a great, great, great part of the city, it still wasn't ever probably safe enough for us to say, yeah, you can go walk the dog by yourself.
It's a different experience. But like you say, you lose one thing to gain another. And I do want to add, I think it's brilliant, something that you don't even realize. You're like, well, we looked, we had friends and relationships right when we're moving. That's so important, I think, where if you can have your cake, you need it too. Hey, we're wanting to move here and we have built-in friends and relationships. I just think that makes it so much better. So I want to definitely reiterate
and
that.
And right after we...
Yeah, that community.
So right after we moved, literally, I think 10 days after, a week after we signed a deal on our contract, some of our best friends in McClinskey's moved to Virginia. And they were even probably more so like us, like Joe's identity was so much tied to Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah. Yeah, we visited them there.
And we were just like on this family vacation with them at the Outer Banks and... Yeah, we were just all hanging out, having a conversation.
We lost the house, the second house that we were going after in June. We were with them, and we were there when it all happened. It was painful. And we were just joking one day because our other friends we were with live in Virginia as well. And they were like, oh, well, why don't you guys buy a house? You guys buy a house, we'll all be neighbors. And who knew? Literally, like 2 weeks later, we closed on a house, and the McClinskeys closed the day after us.
So wait, are the McClinskeys neighbors of yours now?
Yeah.
13 minutes away. Yeah.
I had no idea. That's wild. Oh, wow. Yeah. So good things can come of these tough times because I know that was a big move. You guys lived in the coolest area of DC as far as I'm concerned. And so to make that move for you and your family was a risk. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
Of course. I think this is inspiring to a lot of people.
Absolutely. I think one thing too that I hear a lot when you talk is that you have these like dreams and ideals, right? We have these great things that we envision either for our own life personally or for our family, but then we have values. And sometimes, you know, during the pandemic, these things have been challenged. You know, our dreams, we've kind of had to sometimes waylay, you know, whether it's you moving out of the city, which you always wanted to live in, but your value, your core values of a family and community and, you know, just have outweighed that. So it's interesting how something like this can really help you assess what matters most.
No, definitely. And again, like, you know, the one thing that is a slight concern is like that diversity issue, right? I mean, because our youngest was on a basketball team and he was the only white kid in the league.
Right.
And now we move to Virginia 20 minutes away and there's not a lot of diversity here. Right. And so we're really hoping that we can find ways to maintain that. And I think we're working on some things, but I think overall, you know, in terms of family values and what's important to us, I think everything else got an upgrade with the move.
And great that you can have that assessment and know and find new ways to integrate diversity into your life and awareness.
Yeah.
And just be careful now that you're talking to Jamie, because she's probably going to have a private conversation on fostering, as you know, because we've had two additions through the pandemic. So diversity came pretty easy to our
family.
Just
bring it right into your home. It's totally fine. Melanie just bakes an extra batch of cookies. Everyone's good.
Yeah, we look for that too. And since we are more of a less diverse area, we have a lot of our diversity comes in travel, which really excites us to travel more and include that in there. So,
but not to like resorts, you know, traveling to like real places.
Real places, yeah. So, but I wanted to pivot into you guys also, you know, you made a big leap from going from city to suburbs, which a lot of people have talked about and wanted to do. You've done it and done it successfully now. But pivoting in business, you know, we've watched, first of all, you guys work together in a very successful entrepreneur group that I've attended, I've gotten to speak at, I rave about to people, I have friends that rave and have been with you guys for years. You guys were an in-person group. It was come to our entrepreneur meetings in person in DC, and they were fantastic. But now with the pandemic coming in, that had to come to an end. But Cadre didn't come to an end. You guys just pivoted it, and I've just heard incredible things. So do you guys want to maybe talk a little bit about pivoting the business?
Sure. About a month or two after this happened, you know, the lockdown, whatever you want to call it, happened, we recognized that there might be a good portion of our members that were not in a great place. And we also recognized that we were in a position where we were going to not have, you know, 90% of the expenses that we typically have associated with our business, renting venues, hiring caterers, you know, paying for, you know, food. I think I'm missing some things, but it was going to go down. So we, at the same time, we were able to start providing some virtual content to our members that a lot of people seemed to really be craving, and they were getting a lot of value from that. So we were confident we could continue to find ways to facilitate the introduction of great content and great connections for our members. And that's what we were about before, and that's what we're about now. And so we came up with the idea to do what we call the Cadre Stimulus Relief Package. And we reached out to our members and we let them know that during this time of mostly, if not entirely, virtual interactions, that we were going to be giving them the option to receive back 50% of the monthly investment that they were paying us as cash, or they could have that money directed to charity. And I would say more than half, probably two-thirds of our members opted for the charity option. So we've been donating, you know, probably like $5,000 to $10,000 a month, you know, during the pandemic, and have identified different charities. We've gotten our members involved. And what's interesting is we were running this for a few months, and then our good mutual friend Joey Coleman reached out one day and he said, hey, you know, Joey was one of three members. We had about 77 or 78 members when this started. Joey was one of three that was not located in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. And Joey would typically fly in for the big sexy events that we do, the universities where we bring in the Gary Vaynerchuks and the Sally Hogsheads. But he wasn't participating in the smaller stuff. And he's like, I've been able to participate in all of the smaller things that you're doing now. It's been better for me than it was before as a result. And then the light bulb went off. Hey, we can be providing value for people regardless of where they're located. And there's probably a lot of people regardless of where they're located that would benefit from this. And so we asked some of our members to get involved, and a handful of people that I was like interacting with on email or Facebook Messenger of, oh, by the way, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And we're charging them half what we normally charge, but it was what our members were paying now with the stimulus, if you will. And, you know, I think we've added 50 members, almost 50 members. So we've grown.
Wow.
Yeah, we've grown by over 50%. And we
I was about to say, that's about 70% growth probably right there. If my humble math is right.
About 120 members now. And, you know, they're in Canada, they're in California. So they're all over the place. And it's really made it, I think, a better experience for everyone. Because now, especially when we curate these smaller interactions that I think have become a favorite, especially during, you know, this virtual environment, we're able to put people in Zoom chat rooms together with, we're not limited just by the people that are in the DC area. So we can connect our DC members with people in California or Iowa or Texas and create more synergy, more collaboration, more benefit, I think, for everyone.
How did you guys, though, because I've spoken at your events, I've attended your events, and you guys had a real community feel. There was a welcoming, you were well taken care of. So you get that real experience. How have you guys kept that community and that experience online? I know so many people, even including myself, with different things we do, how have you done that? Because you've done it really well. What, how have you kept that community feel virtually?
I mean, we have the same, a la Joey Coleman. Thank you for his, you know, his knowledge and magic that he, and his nudge. No, but I'm also talking about like the onboarding experience, because his first 100 days book, he worked to get our member onboarding process. And we do the same thing for our virtual members. So they're still, you know, receiving a welcome call. They're getting paired up with a new a member in Cadre who will talk to them all about the community. They're receiving books from past speakers of Cadre. You know, we have different channels of communication within Cadre. We have an app called the Co-op where they can share information or ask for help once a week. You know, we're still getting all these touch points to welcome them into the community. We're announcing the new members to the community and they get to reach out and connect that way. And it's been a lot of fun. There's been, I'd say all of our sort of like OG Cadre members who have been around since 2011 are super excited to see so many people coming in as well, because it's a lot, you know, they've been here since the beginning. So this is just like super fun for them to meet new people and grow their network as well. And I will say, you know, now that everything's virtual, I know a lot of us have Zoom fatigue and it's getting tiring. And, you know, what's crazy is I think within our group, I mean, we just had one of our holiday parties 2 weeks ago, and it was a Zoom wine tasting by our friend Kirk Drake and his wife Kimberly, the Resistance Wine Company. And they, I kid you not, we were on a 5 hour wine tasting Zoom with our
family. Five hours and 45 minutes.
5 hours and 45 minutes. So even that though everybody's tired, it's lonely. You know, we miss each other, and we, I'm really grateful for the fact that we've been able to continue connecting people and doing fun things and impactful things as well. So
people who are zoomed out, or people who prior to this were, you know, I go to too many events. Like, people don't say that if they're going to the right events, if they're talking to the right people. And for us, it's always been a call.
Exactly right.
Yeah. It's always been a call to quality. Yeah. And the way that we've maintained it, right? Because for a number of years, we would be asked, the quality of the people in your group are so amazing. Why is that? And I would just give it lip service the way a company would give lip service about great customer service. They can't really, a lot of them can't explain it. You have to become a customer in order for you to see how great the customer service is. And then one day, a few years ago, I just blurted out that I think the reason why we've always been able to maintain such a high caliber and high quality member base, it's because of the other business I have. And you can probably relate to this a little bit, but, you know, I've been a financial advisor since 1998. I have a wealth management firm, and that pays the bills. And so I never felt like, when we're looking at applications for new members for Cadre, I'm never looking at an application while at the same time thinking, we may need this person's $500 a month to pay our mortgage in 9 months, or we may need this to make payroll. It's just having the flexibility to say that this is not, we can be indifferent towards any one person's $500 a month, which is what we were charging pre-pandemic. And I think that's what's allowed us. And it works both ways, because now I have two businesses, and the ancillary benefit of having two businesses going side by side at the same time is that you can really stick to your guns and have the courage in a way that I probably wouldn't if I just had one business, to really say, this is the kind of person that's a good fit for each business. This is who I want to work with, and I'm not going to compromise on that.
That's been huge. And I've watched you do that. The one thing I always know, again, through good buddies like Joey, and that they said, Derek and Melanie are tremendous gatekeepers. They could grow it more, but if we have certain, as Jamie was talking about, values, these are our Cadre values. I don't care your balance sheet net worth. And if you're acting like this, doing this, unscrupulous, you're out, you're done. And there has to be sort of that protection. You know what I mean? And I've watched you guys do that. Joey's said, this is why it's stayed so intact. So you guys need to take credit. And I think you're right, Derek. A part of me, I know Jamie and I talked about, you know, the work we love to do with family.
Yeah.
It's still less than 10% of our income.
Yep.
My real estate investment company, and now different things Jamie and I do with real estate projects, has been, that's our bread and butter. And what I've learned, part of me is like, oh, I wish, you know, and you probably felt this, maybe we should be doing Cadre more and less of this. My investment company, the same as yours, has given me the stance where I don't need to sell out. Yep. I don't have to push it. I don't need to create a rinky dink product or bring an extra, you know, it can be more wholesome, if that makes sense.
You don't have to try as hard.
Yeah.
I get you. And just enjoy and follow the passion and the omens more than forcing anything, right?
And I'd say for 18 Summers, you guys have been an example of that. We're not world acclaimed yet, but we have a good reputation. I think we've helped a lot of families. And I want to say Cadre's value of that, which I learned about you guys, like Derek and Melanie, they're nice people. They are very protective gatekeepers over their Cadre group. I appreciate that. I don't know if I ever told you guys that, but I might as well tell you online. It's been an inspiration to us to how we grow 18 Summers responsibly. So thank you for that.
You know, it only takes 3 or 4 people to screw the whole thing up, right? You let a couple people in and they start, you know, directly soliciting other members or signing everybody up for their email list. And, you know, we don't have a lot of rules within Cadre, but the one question that I always ask myself, if a member says, can I do this? Or would this be okay? The question that I ask is, if every single person in Cadre did this tomorrow, would it be a good thing or a bad thing? Right.
That's a great question.
Right. If everybody, of course, you can't add everybody to your email newsletter, because if you got 119 email newsletters in your inbox tomorrow, you would say, this is crazy, like totally inappropriate. I don't want to do it anymore. Right. So asking that one question answers almost every other question that we get asked or have to ponder.
Yeah, I've never heard that. I know Jamie just note takes. She's our note taker through this.
There's a bunch of stars
right next to it on that one. Like, that is a powerful question. It's so true too, because you sacrifice for 2 or 3 clients for growth and they can create attrition of 80% of what you've built. That's a really important thing to remember. So I appreciate the reminder. And I love how you guys have taken that lemon and made lemonade. And again, because it's a good lesson for me, because not that I would have doubted you guys, I just doubted the situation. Like, well, how are you going to keep that community feel and that when we're not in person and we're not able to cheers our wine glass together? And it's like, you had a 5-hour, 40-minute wine tasting. That's like, well, proof's here. We did it. So, you know, kudos to you guys. And I think it's a good example that whether it's business or family, we can overcome these things. And there might be better things on the other side.
And what's crazy, and we're sort of evaluating right now how much of a push we want to make to grow even more, because the 50 new members that we've added probably came from 70 people getting asked, by some by us, a lot by our members. But the yeses were so prominent and so quick that it makes us realize that there's a lot of people out there probably right now that would really benefit from having access to a community, the ability to develop and deepen professional relationships. And so juxtaposed with that is the fact that we've never had a sales pipeline. We've never proactively reached out to people to say, hey, you want to join our thing, right? And it's always been much more of a passive, you know, we wait for people. Even if somebody gets introduced to us or referred by us, to borrow a term from Marcus Sheridan, he called it assignment selling, which is you get a bit of an assignment if you want to potentially be considered for our group. And you to go to our website, we want you to read through these pages, and we're going to be very upfront about who we're for and who we're not for. And if you like what you see, then at the bottom of that, you can fill out the application, right? And what that means is we have less conversations with people because they say, well, you know, this is too much of a time commitment, or I don't think I can do this, or I don't like how much the cost is going to be. But the conversations that you do have are people that are well-versed, you're getting to the chase, and it's oftentimes them trying to convince us as to why we should let them be a part of Cadre, because we've framed it that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, you know, we're open to and interested in potentially growing more. We think we can handle more without diminishing the quality up to a certain extent, but we've also never marketed. We've never been pushy about it. So trying to navigate that right now.
And there's some natural marketing there. So like you said, when you're not having to force growth, then I think growth can come in certain ways. Like I've flown up to just attend before. I've met Joey and Kirk and all them there. But I'm not going to do that every month from St. Augustine, so I don't want to be away from family and that. Right. Now I go, oh, well, I got to keep that on my radar for Cadre, because if I can, I know the people and the quality. And also there's a thing where, gosh, I don't want to be a no-show. If I'm joining, then I'm not really doing my part to help the group. But I know I wouldn't keep that promise to fly up every month.
which is why we didn't.
Which is why we didn't do it. Like I said, Rod, I love the cadre concept.
And if they would have you, I'm just saying. Well,
of course.
You don't like rap music.
They like you. They like you, so that might be my in.
They don't like, you don't like rap music.
I'm not as much into rap as the three.
Or Taylor Swift.
Not Taylor Swift. I'm not a Taylor Swift.
Sorry. You're off the list.
No Tay Tay for me. So, but no, but seriously, but that just shows as us being, you know, within your wheelhouse, it wasn't an option for us before with four kids, two businesses. But now it's like, wow, that is a concept that makes sense. So we are big cheerleaders for you guys. I've always said I love what you're doing. I also think it's important for people to hear because there's a lot of entrepreneurs listening to us. We have a lot of entrepreneurs in 18 Summers. You guys indirectly have taken on EO, YPO, other groups, where for a semi-blind eye, they'd say, oh, there's no way that's going to work. But you guys have done it. You've done it. You know, you're kind of that, you're set up against someone who's 7'1".
David Glenn.
You're 5'8", you know, Spud Webb in it. You're still putting up the points. So, like, was that a nervous for you to take on these bigger entrepreneur groups or not really?
I still to this day do not view them, and maybe I'm wrong for this, but I still do not view them as direct competition based on how differently we do things. I would say that I tell people we compete with them the way that a baseball game and a movie compete on a Friday night for your time. Like, you can't do both, but it's a different experience if you do one versus the other. But I don't think about it that much. I mean,
no, we have a lot of members that are multiple
in both.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about pivoting business and family. Is there anything, because you two are both involved in each, what's interesting is a lot of our listeners, their biggest challenge is that everyone's roles just got even deeper. The stay-at-home mom then becomes the teacher. The parent that was out working now has to be home and fighting the noise and figuring out their new schedule and working extra because they feel like they're never on and they're never off. And so, you know, all these blurry lines. Now, you two have navigated both transitions together. How has that been with the two of you? Any?
I told people we complement each other. He's very much the visionary in the clouds person, and I'm like the one reining him in and getting down to the details. So aside from the virtual school stuff in the spring, it's been really fun, especially we did so many unique, interesting events in March and April early on, almost to help ourselves through the madness. I mean, we had breathwork people come on. We did bar three classes. We did yoga and meditation. And we were doing all sorts of things to sort of help us cope through the event and then bring our members in with us. So it was, I think, you know, we work well together in that way. You guys were tooting our horn so much. I feel like I need to do the same for you. I will say we've incorporated family meetings into our family. It's something that we do every week. We cherish that time. Our kids know the verbiage. We call it the Coburn kudos, is like the compliment and acknowledgement and apology. I think, you know, that for us has been such a big, profound improvement in our family life and just getting the conversations going. We didn't even talk about our quarantine, but we didn't talk about it. We were actually quarantining with a friend of ours and her daughter. They're living with us for this school year.
Wow.
We had no idea.
Yeah. And it's been fun. You know, we did it. She's a single mom. She was having to move out of the city as well and wasn't in a good school district. It just, all the way it all worked out, it just happened. You know, we've even introduced them to the family meeting and they're participating, and I feel like it'll be a part of their lives moving forward as well. So thank you for that.
No, you're welcome.
Where I'm at right now, right? And it's funny, I mentioned I used the competition of the movie and the baseball game analogy for cadre, but it's also like the growth of cadre right now, the growth of my wealth management business right now. The competition for that, I think, is the family time. And it's the current rhythm for which that we're enjoying, right? Like, I mean, we're cooking meals 4 to 5 nights a week. We're not missing any dinners. The main reason we wouldn't have family dinners before was mainly because of sports, right? It was our kids having sports all the time, and that's not happening now. And so, you know, for me, it's like, is it okay that, you know, because part of me wants to say, like, let's grow cadre and add another 50 members, and there's so many more people that we can help and we can do this. But then it's like, well, then maybe I'm not working out every day. Maybe I'm not having that quality time with my kids and my wife every day. Maybe I'm not sitting in the sauna every day. And that's kind of what's going on for me right now is, did I work really hard for a while to get to the point that I'm at right now? And should I really just be enjoying the, you know, I don't feel complacent, like we're still doing good things and working hard, right? But at the same time, it's weird for me to not have something where I feel like I want to grow, I want to start, I want to figure out a way to be of service to people.
Isn't that amazing that, you know, as we, like you said, you just really worked really hard and to get to this place, and now you're at this place, and some, there's that little part of you that wants to do more. But, you know, kudos to you guys for realizing that your time is currency as well.
Do you guys have any good thoughts on the one area we were fully on board with the family board meetings for a while, and that's kind of taken a back seat? I don't know if you guys, especially as winter's approaching, nothing's open, you know, it's going to be really cold here. Do you have any suggestions? I mean, I'm trying to carve out mini blocks of time every day if I can, 15, 20 minutes. Like, I'm just hanging out with this kid. That's definitely been something that unfortunately has taken a back seat because of, you know,
it's definitely been different through COVID. So currently, yeah, our 15-year-old's favorite thing to do on board meetings is go driving because he's got his learner's permit. And that's nice. Like the thing right now. And so it doesn't always have to be like going to do something. It could be game, you know, it could be spending time playing board games or creating a board game or a scavenger hunt. Or I heard you say bike riding, like take a long bike ride to, you know, what were you thinking?
I mean, and I don't know what's going on in your individual state right now, but the simplicity of breaking bread just one-on-one too is really, really cool. As long as, again, there's not that zzz in your pocket, you know, that I'm telling you that I don't even have to look, but if I feel zzz in my pocket, I've just gone in four different directions because I'm like you. Sometimes the simplicity of a one-on-one meal, even if you can't get to those normal activities you are doing and you can't get outdoors to do something, a long meal isn't a bridge thing, but one-on-one. So there's no sibling rivalry. You know, if one of the boys leans more towards mom, mom's not there. You can't lean on her. Or it could be the opposite, Mel. It's like one of the boys leans toward Derek, you're alone. And I think you guys have a perfect family unit because it's
two kids.
So if you're going for a one-on-one meal, with
you
one,
just have the other
you
one.
Just flip-flop. You know, and that's been such an easy cheat for a lot of our friends, you know, with good family dynamics like yours. So I think a simplicity of a meal, Derek, goes a long way. There's something to breaking bread. We all know that. So if you still have places and you can go and you can do that with them, that can be a pretty nice thing to do.
Yeah, totally. And I think too, also, right, like it's happening so much more often now. And it's like the intentionality of it was really valuable before, where we had so much on our schedule, so much on our calendar. Now, I mean, we woke up last Saturday and I said, there's nothing on our calendar. And I don't ever remember what it feels like to not have anything on our calendar.
Yeah, it's crazy,
it's amazing,
right?
And so there are moments that aren't planned every day, you know, where just hanging out with one kid and doing this or doing that. But yeah, I like Dexter asked the other day, like, when are we doing? We haven't done like a daddy date in a while. When are we doing that again soon? So
cool.
Even if you just start with a meal, I mean, even just starting with a meal, if you can't get outside, you can't get to a sporting event, you can't go shoot hoops inside somewhere, you know, a meal is a good starting point. Just of that intention of just being one-on-one, and he sees, gosh, dad's phone is off. You know what I mean? Because it literally slows down the atmosphere. I know when my phone's off, it's like, So, yeah. Our highlights of the end of our interview, we started this in the beginning of the pandemic because we started to ask ourselves, you know, everyone always says, what would you tell your 21-year-old self? You're like, oh, my 21-year-old self was a train wreck. I'd tell him this, that, you know. We've looked at it the other way, saying, what would our 75-year-old self say to us right now? You know, the older, wiser, what do you think they'd say?
They've already been through depressions and pandemics and crazy toddlers and moving. And
so we started doing this at the beginning of the pandemic, and Jamie had great insights. I had simple insights, like my 7-year-old self would be saying, oh man, eat it up. This is the good stuff. Screw the pandemic. Grumpy
Cooper
teen.
Cooper chocolate is the funnest game
Cooper
in the world.
Cooper chocolate, you know. We got grumpy teens, toddler meltdowns. I won't be here forever. It's the good stuff. Soak it up. And then we've just started to ask every guest, and some of the insights have been profound. Yeah. Of what would your 75-year-old self say? Like, you've been here before, maybe you'd be here again, you'll be fine. But
or maybe way to go creating that community, yeah. You know. But that's just what the world needed.
What do you, and I know we're putting you on the spot, but if you guys had to think 75-year-old self, you guys are still hip, still living in DC, you know, but a little bit older, a little, maybe a little grayer. What advice do you think your 75-year-old self would give to you today or just in general?
We have a routine. We've had a routine with our kids where we lay in bed with them while they're falling asleep at night. And it used to be longer than we want it to be. And we figured out a way to make it more reasonable, but they still, and our 11-year-old now, we do it for 3 minutes. And he's like, okay, you're like, you can leave and come check on me now. And, you know, it's funny, like as I progress through that, where at first, without having the right perspective, my thoughts were, gosh, hurry up and go to bed so I can watch this show with your mom, or we can spend time together, her and I. And, you know, because it might be 45 minutes, right? And then it got to the point where I just said, a year and a half, 2 years ago, with my now 11, who was 9 at the time, like any day now, he's going to tell me he doesn't want me to lie in bed with him anymore. So I'm going to soak it up and try to be present and not complain. But then there's another level that I realized, which is, we'll call it when I'm 75, to answer your question. When I'm 75 years old, how much money would I pay to have one night to lie in bed and snuggle with my 11-year-old?
Yeah,
what is huge. That? What is that check that I would write to go back in time for one night, right? And, and I say that to myself now every night when I get to have the opportunity to lay in bed and snuggle with them and talk with them and be there with them while they fall asleep. So that's one thing. And then I would say that the other thing for me is, I would just say my 75-year-old self would say, I'm glad you didn't save it all for me, that you enjoyed more things while you were younger. And I think you guys know this, but you know, I'm about 80% done with my next book, which it's around the concept of like retiring, the concept of retirement. So in my wealth management business, I realized that the best thing that I've done for the majority of my clients is help them come to the realization that they're never going to want to fully stop working. And I help them realize that, hey, even if you're not like running a business making $2 million a year right now, it might, you know, work 10 or 15 hours a week as a consultant or serve on a couple of boards and you're going to make $200,000 a year. But I think that too many people have just accepted this sacred cow, like you retire at 65, you don't do anything at that point. And yeah. Most people, when they get there, are going to say, this is boring. I want to do something. And the problem is, if you technically had enough to retire, then any money you earn after that is money that you don't need. And you can't go back in time and change the way that you're doing things. And so I'm really hoping that I can inspire people in their 40s and 50s, maybe even 60s, to think about it now, because I think just too many people aren't even going to think about it until they're 65, to think about it now and hopefully liberate them to spend more of their time and money on the things and people that are important to them right now instead of waiting. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'll talk with somebody and have the traditional financial planning conversation. What do you want to do when you retire? Like, I'll indulge you. Well, we're going to travel the world with my wife. Well, when was the last time you and your wife went out on a date? And it's never
enough.
Like, what makes you think your wife's going to want to travel the world with you if you're not even taking her out on dates right now? Same thing with seeing grandkids. Well, you're not home, have dinner with your kids now. So why are your grandkids and your kids going to be super excited to do this with you? Or I'm going to play golf 5 times a week. Well, you just had your knee replaced. You haven't been to the gym in 4 years, but all of a sudden everything's going to work and you're going to play golf 5 days a week when you're 65. So, you know, I think that I'm trying to live that. And I think I do live that as much as possible, where my 75-year-old version will be happy that he's still engaged in meaningful work. He's still making contributions. He's still earning. And that the ability for him to do that is what freed me up to not have to worry as much about the grind right now.
I love it.
That's great advice.
I love it.
Absolutely.
How much of a check would you pay for this moment right now? We're going to quote that and put your name right on there.
That's right, powerful.
There. That is a good one. I mean, that gives me goosebumps.
I mean, what is it, right? I mean, if you had unlimited funds, right? And even if you had limited funds, I mean, like $10,000, $20,000. Like, I mean, if you could just, I mean, I know your kids are older than mine, right? Like if you take your oldest and you could magically make them like six again, like for a day.
I would do it.
I'm talking a seven-figure check. Yeah.
I know. Our big boys will still come flop in the bed sometimes. And just like one of them even like fell asleep and took a nap. And I was like, they're in our bed. It's just the best feeling in the world.
It's interesting because we have 3, 6, and then 15, 17. So right in between. And now they went from being able to carry both of them up the stairs to they're, you know, 3 inches taller than me. Yeah. The little ones are still there. So I'm like, just chewing on them and, you know.
Changes so fast.
But yeah, but each age is great. So I love that one.
How about you, Melanie?
Mel, let's get one from you though, too.
Oh gosh. I mean, I think the advice I try to give myself on the regular is the days are long and the years are short. And to try to always have that framework in my daily life because, you know, boys can be challenging and, you know, Dexter's getting into that tween era where he's starting to have a little sass and just remembering that, like, that's the frame I give myself. I think my 75-year-old self is probably going to tell me the same thing. So I immediately thought of his. I was like, I'm going to let you have that one.
I also think that my 75-year-old self will say that it was really smart that I always prioritized our relationship over the relationship that we have with our kids. That not that I have to pick, right? And especially like now, I don't have to choose, but just this idea that I do think the best thing that I teach my kids, like sometimes directly, sometimes just indirectly, is I teach them how to treat and love a woman. Like I think that's the best thing that I do as their dad. And yeah. I think that I might be wrong, but I think that I'll feel good about that choice when I'm 75 too.
Because I'm still going to like you when they're gone.
Yeah. Yes.
No. Well, listen, we really appreciate you guys. We've had some great times together. We want to have many more. The example you set, Cadres, it's been great to be a part of it in different ways. And we love what you're doing and your story definitely continues to inspire. I wanted to make sure, how do people learn more about you?
So our website for Cadre is cadredc.com.
And we're about to reflect all the virtual changes that we're making, like in the next week or so.
Yeah,
so
we're going to be updating those very soon. And we also have a big event with Adam Grant coming up in February. So that's a great way to get introduced to Cadre, see what we're about. We'll be having him come. He's speaking on...
Power of knowing what you don't know, which I think is really relevant and timely. And this was another COVID win, to be honest with you, because I've been trying to get Adam. Adam wrote the cover testimonial for my book in 2014. And Cadre is in the mold of his book, Give and Take. So Give and Take came out a year and a half after Cadre started. And I reached out to him and I was like, dude, like we have this thing and it's like everything that you talked about in your book. And we became, you know, nice acquaintances. Like I'll stop short of calling him a friend because I think that people overuse that, but we keep in touch and we've always maintained a good relationship, but he just blew up so fast, you know, like he did that book with Sheryl Sandberg. And so, you know, at Wharton, just a short train ride away, but the fact that we're doing it virtually now, all of a sudden made that a possibility. So we're pretty excited about that.
Great.
Love it.
The COVID bonuses.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much for your time and for being here and sharing your wisdom with us.
Yeah, we appreciate it, guys. Take care and hopefully we'll do this again.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.